Chris from Besser. And I would like to take this opportunity to present to you a man who was a household name in radio for many, many years. A fine personality, a great American. May I present Don Wilson?
Well, thank you, Chris. Thank you very, very much. Got a little noisy background here. I hope nobody objects too much to it.
Well, so again, tonight here at the Petroleum Club for a very good worthwhile talk, believe me.
Wasn't this a wonderful turnout for the Golden Boy Award of the Boys Club here in Long Beach? This is such a wonderful turnout. Over 300 of the leading male citizens of Long Beach and on by hand. And a great representative cross-section of the business, professional life of Long Beach.
Definitely. Let's talk about radio, if you may. It's a field that really fascinates me so much that now that I've become a collector of old radio shows. And, you know, the art, Don, of network radio as we know it is gone. It's dead, or what's left of it isn't around much anymore.
Well, it's a little different character
sure
than it is today.
We collectors, we fans, try to keep it alive and take trading. And it's a growing hobby, and it's a wonderful field of endeavor. I'd like to ask you to start off. How did you enter radio?
Well, Cliff, I sort of got into radio in the back door, let us say, in Denver, where it was my home for many years. I went to school there at the University of Colorado, and I was a serious student of serious music at that time, and I had been coaching voice with the leading voice coach in Denver for a number of years, never expecting to make a dime out of it. And long about 1923, radio came into being, not commercial radio, but early day radio, unsponsored, no money involved. And at that time, I had a pretty good church soloist job in Denver. But for my own amazement and the amusement of my friends, I'd go out and make an appearance on one of the radio stations in Denver, purely for fun. And that's the way I got started in this whole thing. I used to try and sing a little bit. Now I can't carry a tune in a bushel basket.
Oh, boy. The radio was new then, and it was exciting and fascinating. There was something about it that made people say.
Well, I don't know whether you've ever analyzed it this way or not, or many of your people that may subsequently listen to your tape. Radio was a wonderful, wonderful old medium. I can't help but be extremely nostalgic about it because it was so extremely good to me through Jack Benny and other big-name stars in the business. But to analyze radio, it was a one-barrel medium. By that, I mean as compared with television, which is two barrels. One barrel, radio being only audio. Television is audio and visual. But it being a one-barrel medium, we enjoyed the privilege of having the listening audience participate with us in this manner. They would conjure up in their own mind's eye whatever the picture was that was being portrayed to them as the words flowed out of the loudspeaker of their radio receiver. And as a result, being a participant in that way themselves, they became an active part of the show. And they built up certain images as to the personalities who were on radio in those days, as just exactly what these people looked like in their mind's eye, what the situation was in their mind's eye of the scene that was being set at that time. And because they participated, they became most rabid, loyal fans, a thing that we don't enjoy in television today because everything is graphic, it's blueprinted for them. An opportunity afforded to rise to fame of a different type personality than television does today. Television has its great stars and develops its great personalities, but in a different vein from radio. And the reason for it was that you had this tremendous loyalty of your audience who participated with you.
Did you announce Jack's show from the beginning?
Not from the beginning of Jack's advent into radio. No, Jack had been on the air 2 years before I joined him in New York City.
How did you join him?
Well, I was on the staff of NBC in New York. I'd been taken into New York by NBC primarily as a sports announcer. I used to do sports out here on the West Coast for the network, and I did the Rose Bowl game for a number of years. And NBC in New York thought I had something that they would like to have back there, so they hired me, and I went into New York primarily as a sports announcer for football. That was in the fall of 33. In the spring of 34, Jack was changing clients at the end of the first 26 weeks sponsoring his show, and I was thrown into an audition. Anybody that was on the NBC staff that was available without conflict was in the audition, along with a lot of the freelance boys around town, and I just got lucky, I guess. I laughed at the right place. I don't know what else to attribute it to.
Okay. You joined Jack's show in the spring of 34?
In the spring of 34.
Right.
We were on 13 weeks to finish out the season for General Tire. Then in the fall of 34, General Foods picked us up, and we were at
J-E-L-L-O.
Yellow again.
Right. You know, in my own personal collection, I have the next to last broadcast for Jello. I can't tell him California in June of 1942. You remember that particular broadcast?
Charlie, we were on our way to Canada.
Phil Harris had...
During the war.
Right.
That's right. We were on our way to Canada for the Canadian Sixth War Loan, and we stopped at several places. Intermittent spots along and Camp Kellum?
Kellum.
Kellum, Camp Kellum. I remember being there, yes.
Next to last broadcast for Jello.
How about that? That goes back years, doesn't it?
Okay.
You don't look that old to me.
Well, I'm only 24, but through tape, I can go back a long, long back
wonderful.
And then for 1 year, I believe in 43, you were sponsored by Grape Nuts.
Yes, that's another General Foods product. You see, we had Grape Nuts and Grape Nuts Flakes.
Right.
Being under the Jello division of General Foods. Then we have the Lucky Strike account.
How did you get Lucky Strike?
Well, they bought it.
and it was Jack Sponson right to the end, was it?
No.
Radio.
We had, wait a minute. Maybe in radio it was. We had the Lucky Strike down about 15 years, as I recall. And it could be that we bowed out of radio under the Lucky Strike banner.
Well, it was in 44 you picked up Lucky Strike,
right? I think that's right.
Right.
I think that's right. Gee, you're making me think back of things I haven't thought about for a long while.
the big story in radio in 1945 was the famous Paley Ray, where he went to NBC and took everybody, like Edgar Bergen, Bing Crosby.
Started out with Amos and Andy,
Amos
you remember?
And Jack Benny.
That's right. Paley really made a raid on NBC at that time. Sort of paid off.
Jack's first broadcast was January 1st, 1949, over CBS, the day my brother was born.
You amaze me. You know these facts much better than I do, and I was there, and I don't remember. This is fantastic. Your father's over here laughing.
Okay. I wanted to ask you, when was the last Benny broadcast on radio? The year or the month? Do you remember?
We made the transition into television, if I remember correctly, in 1949 or 50. Now, we were doing only two shows a week on television and alternating it with radio there for the first, at least, year after we made the transition to radio. Performers of the stature of Benny, and along with many, many others, looked at this new medium with a little bit of concern, and justifiably so, I believe, because they weren't too sure what this magic lantern was all about. And so anything new that, where you've got a great reputation at stake, you look at it with a jaundiced eye and study it pretty carefully. And that's just what Jack did.
I have a few shows for a few of his radio performances where he says, tune in next week, and in the meantime, watch our television show. It's sort of both mediums.
That's right, yes.
Is it hard doing that?
No, not particularly. Not any harder than going into a new medium without radio would be, because radio, we had done so much that it sort of fit like a hand in a glove with the cast.
No.
The great demand, of course, was on the writers, people that furnished it with jokes.
On one of the shows, you mentioned all the writers.
Well, the first writer that Jack had when I went with him was a man named Harry Kahn.
Yeah.
Then Bill Maher and Ed Boulogne joined Jack.
Given have Merle McKenzie. They were writing for Crosby. Bill Maher and Merle McKenzie were writing for Crosby.
Well, McKenzie was an engineer at NBC. And Murdo subsequently became an associate of Crosby's in a managerial capacity some way, not as Bing's manager, but in his radio and television enterprise.
Sportsman Quartet were really nice to hear, especially when they sang the Lucky Strike commercial.
Well, you know, they were a great bunch of boys. I have no idea. I think they're disbanded. But they were a fine bunch of boys, and the alacrity with which they handled the integrated commercials and with the quartet was a great highlight of the show.
You know, one night in 1947, Jack couldn't get his quartet, and he had problems, so he came up and announced, "Hold it, here's the new member of the quartet, Bing Crosby." You know that broadcast? He had Andy Russell, Dick Ames, and Bing Crosby.
My golly, you amaze me. So this son of yours has more facts and figures than I can even recall. This is fantastic.
It's fun hearing these shows over and finding more of them. And, you know, I wonder if the Jack Benny program, along with many of the other programs in Golden Age of Radio, will ever be released on LP to the public, if there is a demand.
Well, they were re-released on radio years ago. They went through and edited many of those old Benny shows, and they cut out the opening and closing commercial and the integrated commercial so that there was no commercialism listed with it. But it was an expensive process. And it got to a point where they could no longer do it because there wasn't enough money in it to pay the editing bill, let alone pay Benny or anybody else who was on the show. And it is too bad to lose those things because there's a generation today that is completely away from any inoculation of a thing of that kind. And they might appreciate it, or maybe it's an era gone by. I don't know.
Jack was wonderful. He was one of the last big name performers to stay on radio right to the end.
Yes.
Him and Edgar Burden.
They were at it a long, long time.
Good 20 years.
People of that caliber are just not with us anymore, and it's a lost art. And you get a little bit sad if you think back on it, but it was great while it lasted, and it's been nice of you to sit down and let me talk with you about it.
Definitely.
I'm amazed at your background, your knowledge, it's astounding. You remember more about it than I do, and thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. It's been a pleasure to have you at the time of the interview.
Thank you. Good night.
I would like to close off this interview by going back through the years and presenting highlights of Don Wilson on the Jack Benny program.
The Jell-O program, starring Jack Benny, with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Kenny Baker, and yours truly, Don Wilson. The orchestra opens the program with This Can't Be Love. Program coming to you from Camp Chowan, California, presented by Jell-O and Jell-O Pudding, starring Jack Benny, with Barry Livingston, Phil Harris, Dennis A. Rochester, and yours truly, Don Wilson. The orchestra opens the program with The Real American. Dessert lovers everywhere. It's a trademark, the property of General Foods, and the name of America's favorite gelatin dessert. For years, you've seen these big red letters on every box of Jell-O's six delicious flavors. And now, today, they also identify Jell-O's seventh delicious flavor, a brand new Jell-O Freak cola flavored Jell-O. Here's something utterly different, the first cola flavored dessert, and what a delightful treat it is. Cola flavored Jell-O is one of the most attractive desserts you ever saw, with a beautiful gold and amber color. And there's a new thrill waiting for you when you taste its rich, tangy cola flavor. So full of zip and zest and locked in for your extra enjoyment by Jell-O's new process. Tomorrow, order cola-flavored Jell-O and see if you don't agree that it's the grandest new dessert in years. If your grocer doesn't yet have it, ask him to get it for you. Remember the name, cola-flavored Jell-O, the first cola-flavored dessert, Jell-O's seventh delicious flavor.
Nights it's Burns and Allen, but on Sunday night it's Benny and Allen. Listen now to Benny and stay tuned at 8:30 for Allen. And in between, remember the Harrises, Alice and Phil, and the Charlie McCarthy Show with guest tonight Rudy Vallee.
The Jack Benny Program, presented by Lucky Strike. American.
Starring Jack Benny with Barry Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. This is Chris Lombesis inviting you to tune in again next time for another Spotlight on a Star.